The following programming is sponsored by Bishop Mary Enterprises, LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Real. Real. Relaxed. Relaxed. But relevant. But relevant. She's an absolute professional with a homegirl feel. Welcome to the Bishop Mary Show with Bishop Mary Foy Palmer, where she will discuss both religious and secular topics with various guests from all walks of life. So thanks for tuning in to the Bishop Mary Show. And now, here's Bishop Mary.
And top of the morning to you. Good morning, good morning, good morning. We are live here in the studio. And I got my guest host. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Bishop Mary. Brother. How are you?
He's going to throw that voice on y'all this morning.
We are here.
Yes, Brother Marcus, we're here live in the studio, and we are ready for a great, 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 great show. We're hoping that you're tuning. If you're driving, please be careful. There are quite a few accidents out. So we want you to pay attention to the road. Amen. And be safe to get wherever you got to get to. And also, we want to take this moment to dedicate this show to the nation of Israel. 1 year ago today at 6:59, Hamas invaded their country. 1,200 people were killed, 250 in captivity. As far as we know, there's about 63 to 97 folks that are still in captivity waiting to come back in. So we dedicate this to our brothers and sisters in arms. And I'm looking forward to celebrating with our governor shortly. About the memory of that and what we can do to continue to support, because if it could happen to them, come on.
It can happen.
It's going to happen to us. But stay tuned. I have a fabulous guest coming on who's going to be able to bring us up to date, and we're going to begin our show with this message.
Hundreds of shooting incidents and multiple victims. Homicides that were senseless, cold, intentional, killing our men, women, and children in the African American communities. The question is, am I my brother or sister's keeper? Have we considered each other as neighbors? We can wait for someone to come in and save us, or we can save ourselves. The violence must end. Do your part.
Just how much
how much
we can bear.
You can bear.
Hey. And that is James Cleveland, and We Are Our Heavenly Father's Children. I had not heard that song in so long, but it was a good old one, ain't it?
James, Reverend James.
James Cleveland. Come on here for somebody. That big world can really tear up a song. but we are grateful. We are grateful. We are grateful. We have with us this morning Pastor Carolyn Cavanis, and we are hoping that she is available. Pastor, are you with us?
I'm here. Good morning, Archbishop Moore.
Yes, yes, yes. Good morning, good morning, good morning. We're so grateful that you are with us today. She is the esteemed pastor of the AME Church.
All right.
On the main line.
All right.
I mean, you have really stepped up when you've been on the
Main line.
Yes.
I'm excited to meet Reverend Carolyn.
Absolutely.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, she is the esteemed pastor of Bethel AME, or let me do it right, Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church.
That's right.
They like that whole name. Yes, indeed. Out there on the main line, and we are grateful she has joined us. She also is closely affiliated with Black Faith Votes. And the voter commitment card. So, Pastor, why don't you give us a little bit of background about you and your church, and then we'll get into this conversation about Black Faith Votes.
Good morning. Amen. Thank you, Archbishop Mary, and to your co-hosts, and just grateful for the opportunity to be together on this Monday morning, October 7th, and bring you greetings from the Bethel AME Church of Ardmore, nestled in South Ardmore, the historic Black Quarter of the main line since 1895, and
wow.
I've been blessed to serve as the first female pastor in its over 128-year history.
Come on through.
A very special place set apart to not only bring the kingdom down, but also to be a source of succor and comfort and access. And we just believe that we should be the place where heaven and earth meet. And so grateful for the profound ministry that is happening there through our community garden program, which is nationally renowned, and to our vaccine program. We have helped to vaccinate during this pandemic and post-pandemic close to 3,000 people in the region, and mental health support and young people. So you name it. And now we were blessed last year to secure a property right on. In fact, literally as you turn into the block of the church where we were able to secure that and deed it for affordable housing, because one of the pieces that's happening across the region, across the country, is around gentrification, and people should have the right to live in good neighborhoods no matter what they can afford, no matter who they are. And so we were able to purchase a property and deed it affordable housing. And so three families that we were able to save from eviction and just not being able to keep up with the market rates of rentals in the area. So just grateful for Bethel AME Church of Ardmore and the work that we're doing now and continue to do, be on the forefront as we are committed to getting out the vote and ensuring that people have the resources and the access and the know-how, even down to do you need a stamp or do you even need a ride to get your vote out. Where this is a program, Black Faith Votes, which is affiliated with Power Interfaith, which is one of the premier social action faith-based organizations in the country with the chapter here, Power Interfaith, which is led by the interim director, Reverend Gregory Edwards. Many of us may know Bishop Dwayne Royster, who was just elevated to Executive Director of Faith and Action, which is the parent group of Power Interfaith that is based in D.C. And so we're mobilizing with churches and mosques, communities across the Commonwealth to be sure that Black folk have the resources they need, have the conversations, have the phone numbers, the know-how of being able to get the vote out. It's nonpartisan, and we were excited to launch this election cycle as we prepare for Tuesday, November the 5th, the Soul Food Get Out the Vote Dinner. And so I've been mobilized with congregation just around a meal, because we know we like to eat, we like to fellowship, and asking that we have some targeted conversation about voting, why it's important, why we must vote. And then also, you have the tangible resources. So, we had a dinner last week, and we registered two twins of our church, identical twins. They said, Rev, we need to register. I said, well, thank you very much. So we registered them right there at the dinner table. And then have had help people with their mail-in ballot or asking questions about, how do you know your voting place? How do you check it? You go to vote.pa.gov. So just making it a conversation, making it impactful, but also that we need you to take those conversations from that table into other places and spaces that you go amongst your family, colleagues, friends, neighbors, even the strangers in your gate, because we need everyone to feel secure that your vote matters and your vote means something. So, wow.
Absolutely. I just want to put a plug in it and say that we had our soul food Get Out the Vote dinner on yesterday at our church. We had 68 persons in attendance. And I went around there to give them all the cards, ran out the cards, and then I said, are you registered? I was happy to report.
I'm not happy because y'all at having all these 65 dinners and I'm not there.
People, come on, somebody. Minus, of course, if you take away the children, and there was only about 3 children there. So there's 65 people. But out of that, 62 people were registered to vote.
Wow, that's awesome.
And the other 3 took mail-in ballots.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking forward to what that's going to do for us. And of course, they enjoyed the meal.
Yeah, well, see.
We had some fried and baked chicken.
I don't want to talk about that.
We had some macaroni and cheese. We had some green beans. We even had a little bit of shepherd's pie. We had salads, and then of course we went on and had a little cake and some homemade banana pudding.
See how you're doing me, Bishop Mary.
And we left nothing. We left nothing. Amen. We left nothing.
Nothing but nothing. Information to get these votes out.
And these folks were happy. So I was happy in the house that we had 62 adults that were registered. 64 adults were registered. One was not. She is applying for a registration to vote. Her daughter's taking her today. And
Amen.
Then
awesome.
She's going to get her, I gave her a mail-in ballot because she says she can't stay in the polls. So she's going to fill out the mail-in ballot and get registered to vote today. This is the first time. And you won't believe how old she was.
How old? I'm curious.
72.
All right. Somebody help mama.
Her daughter said, I'm taking her to go get registered out at 41st and Market.
Mm.
And then she's going to fill out the mail-in ballot so she can get that back. And she's going to help her with that. So I was thrilled. I was truly, truly thrilled. And then I got 3 invites to do 3 more. I said, well, let me reach out to Pastor Cavendish. Come on, somebody. Amen. We doing our little bit of work.
Pastor Cavendish, yeah. I just want to say I'm excited to meet you for the first time. I know it's on the radio, but I want to also commend you on so many different things. You know, one of the first women, African-American women, to do what you're doing. And you're standing on business, and you're not sitting down. You're up and moving, allowing us to understand that we have work to do. Black faith votes. You're out there making it happen. So I'm so excited about, what you're doing and what's to come. And this is going to be a little side note, but what did y'all have when y'all had that dinner? You don't have to tell me. I'm just messing with you.
We went Italian. We had Italian. We had a lasagna and a salad and charcuterie, because it's the main line, so you got to have different salads. Chopped tossed salad in a fruit cup. You got to get the fruit in.
Oh, my goodness.
And dessert. I don't know what they had. They had some cake out there, and they put some ice cream on it. So that's what we had at our day. And we did it with our sister church. Our church is currently under construction. Mm-hmm. We're doing some much needed deferred historical maintenance and ramps and ADA accessibility. So we've been putting a new kitchen. So we went to our sister church, Bethel AME Church of Bryn Mawr, the oldest Black church, founded on the original main line.
Mm.
And so we had a joint congregation and dinner. And so that was a treat, too, to be able to bring our two congregations together.
And making a difference. And that's what it's all about. I guess I have a quick question for you. How has it been for you, you know, being that you're part of like this interfaith gathering, has it been to reach out to like other people of different faiths and ethnicities to bring them together to get folks registered to vote? How has that process been?
You know, it's been a very, it's been a learning one. I think also in light of, you know, Philadelphia, you have to think interfaith way. We have to learn how to be walk alongside our, and we particularly been particular working with our African American Islamic sisters and brothers. Mm-hmm. And so to learn the language, how are we sensitive, the way in which each other organizes, how do we honor each other's traditions, the conversations, you know, what are the talking points that might, I don't say differ, but there are more, you know, certain issues are of high esteem than others. Mm-hmm. But how do we just bring home just how important? And so even we have a really great a promo video that we did. And so to have my you know, Islamic sister, you know, Aaliyah Kabir, you know, with her, you know, her garb, you know, fully, you know, to show just how integrated this experience is and to see the response. And so that's been, but and I think it just gives us opportunity and ways for future work. Like we just, you know, this election year is important, but all elections are important, but also any issues, right? Things that are happening in our community, that how do we come together? How do we organize and bring together both, you know, churches and other faith communities and traditions?
I know that oftentimes that can be somewhat challenging. It can even be challenging in the Protestant department because we are subdivided by different denominations. You know, we have Lutheran, Episcopal, Baptist, Kojic, AME, CME, AME Zion. You know, I could go on and on. How has that outreach been for varied denominations within the Christian faith?
One has been, you know, certainly relationships are key. And so given that myself and my colleague, Dr. Mark Tyler, who's a pastor of the Mother Bethel AME Church, who is the director of this initiative, we all have relationships that just don't show up for this work, right?
Come
that
on.
We've been building across the way, have been working across each other's aisles and knowing just, you know, and when we need to come together, we know how to sound the alarm. We know how to come together. The second piece is you know, each of these denominations and groups have ways in which they organize. So you have the Monday conference, you have the evening conference, you got Black clergy the fourth Thursday. AMEs, you know.
Yes, you do. I was going to say AME preachers.
AME preachers, we all have these nuances, you know, working through the jurisdictional bishops, right? Working through the district superintendents. So, and then how do we, and I've, you know, really bless God for, you know, how we have non-denominational movements that we also have been encouraging and bringing to the fold. Because I also think, again, that these relationships are powerful, just not for, you know, certainly this is, I mean, this is key for Tuesday, November the 5th, but we also need to be coming together just to one, to get to know each other, to share resources, the assets, you know, this is some of the work that we've been doing on the main line with our churches, both Black and of the interfaith persuasion that, you know, if this one over here has a food pantry, that is the, you know, that's the, I mean, they've got the premier one. I don't need to have a food pantry. I should be collaborating. How do I support that food pantry? If this, you know, congregation here has the physical asset of a lot of space, then how can we work together that when there is space need or we need to bring together community in a large way? So celebrating the collective assets that each of us have, that we're not in competition, but that we are all about a building, as King would call it, beloved community. And so I think this just gives us that kind of, you know, and that like you start to learn things about each other, you know, ways in which you connect, you know, and because our people, you know, are coming from different, you know, on their work day, they're talking to somebody from this church. So how can we as clergy show, you know, and that we build personal relationships? So that's why I would say, you know, this work has been powerful in navigating even the nuances and bringing together the commonality of us all.
Yeah, I really have to commend you on what you're doing and then your thought process on how we work together and not being repetitive. Unless it's something like voting, we got to get as many people out to different places to vote, register to vote. But in terms of like the food pantry, I like the way you said it. This is not a competition. You know, whoever has the biggest space to do this, then let's utilize that space. Let's work together as a community of believers. And that, I think, is powerful. You know, you're just a powerful person. And your perspective, I got to say, is awesome and unique.
Absolutely. Now, if I were playing devil's advocate, what are some of the inhibitions, some of the struggles even in this work? I'm grateful that you are able to have a good collaborative for folks who are willing to work. But how do you deal with voter apathy? How is it that you're reaching the ones that refuse or don't want to talk about voting? What efforts are those being made as well?
Sure. So one is certainly coming up against this notion that, you know, the apathy, as you called it, that my vote, my voice doesn't matter, that I don't have a place in change. I'm not a change agent. I don't see any better. How does the system work for me? How do I, and then I think also when we think about the generational impact of poverty and lack of wealth generation and preservation. Think about, you know, our schools, think about employment, think about, you know, basic rights, you know, that people, it should be a basic right that you have your housing secure, your food secure, your job secure, even within the bounds of your gifts, talents, you know. Everyone should be able to function and have what they need, no matter, you know, where they are in the total boat. And that's what's one of the key issues. And so how is government going to work for me? I would also say that the level of misinformation, the lack of correct and tried and true information. And so helping people to really download and dial down as to what the issues are, what is the impact of the federal level, state level, even your local level upon your daily day of living. I think it takes us back to the lack of civics education, not being in the schools,
very good,
and not understanding how things work. I think also the piece of how we have to also go about, you know, what does leadership look like? And if you don't like something, how can you be a part of the change? And what does change look like? And like, change doesn't happen overnight. And that's why the work of power interfaith, you know, we think about the fair education funding. I mean, they were at the forefront and stuck with that. I mean, this was not a 1 year in and out struggle. I mean, this was several years of back and forth to Harrisburg, back and forth with testimony, back and forth with deposition. I mean, and to see the favorable end. And so now it becomes the execution. How do we make this live? How do people see that this is happening down, you know, at the State House or at Pennsylvania Avenue? But again, how does this impact in my local life? And so that's why I also believe that there's also the need for just as much fervor for local races. So who is on the school board? Who are my state reps? Who are my state senators? Who sits on the, you know, on the main line, you know, it'd be the planning board, you know, who gets to make the decisions about what buildings can come up and what buildings go down, right? Who's on the health advisory committee? I mean, all these, you know, because politics are local. Who's my block captain? You know, who's ensuring that my block is cleaned up and that we get, you know, what we need, the resources, the rakes, the leaf cleanup bags, okay? That the trash from the municipality, that pothole on my street, let's talk about Philadelphia potholes. I mean, that's a whole department in and of itself, right?
Correct.
And so to see that how advocacy, how making the call. That's why, you know, I do applaud Mayor Parker about, I, you know, we want a government, a local government that I can see, that I can feel, and that I know works for me.
Yes.
And that I can have the access, that I don't have to like get to a certain person who gets a certain, that I can make a phone call, that I can send an email, that I can go on the app, yes, and I can see that there was at least a response. At least there's some level of knowing where this is in the pecking order. I mean, if we have technology where, you know, I want a pizza from Papa John's, I can make my order and my app can tell me
that's
that
right.
the order's placed
that's right.
Right. The app tells me that they picked it up, that it's in preparation. And then it says your driver is on
his way.
So along the way, I know where my pizza is, right, along the way. So that's what I think people are looking for.
Yes.
And that's the work, I think, also that power is starting to invigorate, too, is what are the issues? What's on the minds and hearts of people? Gun violence, you know, education, housing, reproductive rights. So all that, I think, is on the table.
Absolutely. I'm so grateful that you said that. If someone wants to get in touch with you about this opportunity, there is a little remuneration that comes along with this for any nonprofit and church. Would you mind sharing that information quickly?
Sure. They're welcome to just call my cell at 973-704-1631. You can call or just text that number, and then we will get you hooked up and get, you know, various things that we'll need, and happy to go from there. And we're doing these dinners, gatherings, brunches, lunch, coffee clutches, all the way through election day. And so we've got 30 or less than 30 days, but we know we can do this banding together.
Absolutely. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in holding a soul food dinner at your church, your nonprofit, your gathering group, your organization, please reach out to Pastor Carolyn Cavanis directly. And she's willing to receive you on this number by text or phone call to 973-704-1631. Again, 973-704-1631. And there is a $250 little love gift that comes with
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. You got to help
you know,
the cause.
Come on. You got to help the cause. Get it while you can. And of course, your voice is your vote, and your vote matters. I'm so grateful that we had you this morning. Thank you for helping an OG out at the last minute. And Pastor, you know I love you.
Absolutely.
And maybe we'll get you back to talk about some more of the historicness on the main line, because sometimes we only think it's in Philadelphia. But I know that you don't mind, and we thank you so much for being a guest here today on the Bishop Mary Show.
We got it. Well, have a good day. Thank
you
God
too.
For you.
All right.
God bless you. All right. We're grateful for Pastor Carolyn Z. Cavanis, who is the esteemed pastor of Bethel AME Church. If you need to reach out to her, please do so at 973-704-1631. Well, coming up right now is our sports moment. We need to hear it from Sports Talk Terry. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. So with the Philadelphia Eagles on a bye, the talk of the town are the Philadelphia Phillies. After dropping a crushing loss, followed by a gem thrown by Zach Wheeler in game one on Saturday, they came back out with Christopher Sanchez as the game two starter, which did shake some heads considering Aaron Nola is the second highest paid pitcher on the roster. He didn't pitch terrible, but he did give up three runs, and the Philadelphia Phillies found themselves in the hole 3-0. They battled back following a two-run home run by Bryce Harper and a back-to-back home run by Nick Castellanos, which got them back into the game tied at three. But then Brandon Nimmo came up in the seventh the following inning, hit a solo shot, which gave them a 4-3 lead. And then in the bottom of the eighth, Bryson Stott, who has struggled a bit as of late, hit a triple to right, which scored both Bryce Harper and Nick Castellanos to give the Phillies a 5-4 lead, followed by a stolen active fielder's choice base by Bryson Stott on a JC Realmuto fielder's choice safe play. Then they came up into the ninth, and superstar third baseman Mark Vientos hit his second home run of the day, a two-run home run, and it was 6-6, and you could feel the air leaving the ballpark. But in the bottom of the ninth, the much-maligned Nick Castellanos, who's suffered a lot of criticism this season and most of his Phillies tenure, came up with a huge single to left, which scored not just only Trey Turner, but was the game-winning run, which gave the Phillies a 7-6 win. Now the series is tied 1-1, and they head out to New York City and Citi Field for the next two games of that series starting tomorrow. So a very, very entertaining series. And I will tell you that most folks have already said if the Phillies manage to get to the World Series and win it, this will be the turning point game that everyone will remember because the bats were alive when the pitching was not at its best. So much to see this week. And also don't forget the Eagles are back in action this weekend against the Cleveland Browns. And that's on Sunday.
Well, thank you so much for that update. You know, I am all about sports in Philadelphia. So we're grateful to hear from Sports Talk Terry. You can catch him on all social media handles. And he is live weekly here on The Bishop Mary Show. Thank you so much, son. Have a great day.
Thank you. You as well.
Up next, this sounds interesting.
Yes.
Do you know what this is?
I know what this is.
Oh, my.
It's about to go
woo.
Down.
Woo. 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 Woo.
Yes. Philadelphia. We are fighting. Come on.
Da, 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 da.
I'm excited. I'm excited.
Woo!
Da 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 da.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Playing my guy.
Come on, woo! Philadelphia.
Playing my guy.
Tri-state area.
Yes.
This is the Bishop Mary Show.
And we are excited because that is a wonderful introduction to a good time and a longtime friend of mine, the Congressman of the 2nd District, none other than Congressman Brendan Boyle. Great to have you back on the show. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Bishop Mary, and thanks for having me on your show. I love that introductory music. It gets the juice flowing on a Monday morning. So it always gets me pumped up when I hear it.
Almost better than coffee. Not quite, but almost.
Almost.
As the next coffee to me.
Absolutely. And so Congressman Brendan Boyle is the happy representative of the 2nd District here in our city and in our state and is a congressman in the U.S. House of Representatives. So would you mind just giving us a little bit of your background and how you got to this point of service?
Yeah, sure. Well, as I said before, it's just wonderful to be with you and the previous times that we've worked together on a number of initiatives. In terms of my background, you know, I'm born and raised in the city of Philadelphia. I am one of those people who is a proud lifer when it comes to Philly, born, raised, and live here. I grew up in the Alney section of the city. My dad was a janitor for SEPTA on the Broad Street line.
Wow.
For many, many years. Before that, he worked in a warehouse for Acme Markets in North Philadelphia. My mother was mostly a stay-at-home mom, but also a school crossing guard in the neighborhood. And I was able to be the first of my family to go to college and to graduate school and then move back home to Philadelphia to get involved in public service and ended up being elected the first Democrat ever to be elected to my state legislative district, representing parts of Northeast Philly and Montgomery County. And then 10 years ago in 2014, I won a part of why I love the Rocky theme song and the whole movie. I won a pretty big upset. I was a 32-point underdog against an establishment favorite, but was able to overcome that to be elected to Congress. And so for the last 10 years, I've been one of only two members of Congress from Philadelphia. My good friend Dwight Evans and I are the two that get to go from our city to represent us in Washington. I represent about half of the city of Philadelphia, stretching from the far northeast all the way down to South Street, everything from Broad Street to the Delaware River.
Wow.
So I'm east of Broad, and then Dwight Evans represents west of Broad Street and a little bit of South Philadelphia as well. And so as a member of Congress, obviously a lot of issues that I've been involved in. But most recently, I've been the ranking member or the senior Democrat on the budget committee. So it's really been a great place to kind of be at the center of most of the legislative fights that we've had in Congress over the last several years.
Wow. Yeah, and I just want to say, you know, the way that it looks, you're a champion winner, all-star player, greater than an MVP.
So, well, let's just hope the Phillies are also champion players at the end of this month.
Well, at least it felt good when we saw them win, right?
Yes.
That was a good feel, you know.
I did. I had to run for extra heart pressure medication at the end of that game.
That game was a real nail biter. Yeah, I caught it. I think I turned it on about the 7th, and I mean, they were booing in Canton. I was like, here go Philly, don't you know?
Bishop Mary, keep it on. You were the good luck charm. We were down 3-0 until you turned it on. So make sure you turn it on in the first inning.
So let me ask you, if you don't mind, Congressman Boyle, being a part of the Democratic Party, you're doing some great things. Being a part of the Democratic Party, what does it mean to be able to control the House in 2025? What would that look like?
It's huge. And, you know, use the word control. It's not about control. It's more about the things we would be able to pass and sign into law. So, for example, we had the majority in the House of Representatives between 2021 and 2022. That's when we were able to pass things like the American Rescue Plan, which delivered more stimulus to people. We were able to deliver through something that was called the PPP. Those were all those small micro loans for businesses that literally enabled them to survive during the pandemic. We were able to, for 1 year in the United States, dramatically expand the child tax credit. In that 1 year, child poverty was reduced by 46% in the United States of America. Sadly, once we lost the majority, that expanded child tax credit expired and went back to the way that it was. I represent a lot of what I call the working poor neighborhoods in Philadelphia, parts of North Philly, the lower Northeast. These are folks, areas that are white, black, Latino, and Asian, where people are mostly employed, but are barely making enough to get by if they are getting by. The kind of programs that we were able to pass in those 2 years made a difference, but there's also so much more that we need to do. So the last 2 years, 2023 and 2024, Republicans have had the majority, and it's been one circus after another. I mean, it took them 15 rounds of voting over 4 days just to elect their own guy as speaker. Something like that hadn't happened before the Civil War. And then after the 15 rounds over 4 days, which was an embarrassment, the guy only lasted 9 months before the Republicans, voted him out.
Yes.
So, you know, I think the contrast is pretty obvious in terms of what we're able to do on my side of the aisle with a small majority. We only had a 4-seat majority, the same size majority that the Republicans have. I mean, you look what we were able to do with it versus what they have not been able to do with it. It really speaks volumes.
It certainly does. And I want to commend you, particularly in being one of our ranking members on the Budget Committee, because you're able to help influence, shall we say, properly, the need for the working poor, who are working hard, aren't lazy and just not doing anything, but are still struggling to meet the daily life demands that just to have a halfway decent life. So you talked about some of your accomplishments, and if you don't mind, over the last 2 years, and what is it that you want to continue to do should you win re-election?
Yeah, you know, I look at the job as kind of in D.C. and in the district. So in D.C., it's about policy and legislation. I talked about the child tax credit. I think if we're in the majority and if Kamala Harris is elected president, that's the other key piece, and probably not in that order. I would say, you know, her holding the White House is first and foremost, and then a close second would be Democrats winning control of and in the majority of Congress. If we're able to do that, we would be able to permanently expand the child tax credit, which, you know, sometimes the names of these programs probably obscure their importance. Basically, what we would be saying is in our tax code, we recognize that it is really expensive to be a parent. And, you know, there are folks on the other side who talk about life, and I completely have that as a value. But if we're going to be real about that, then let's make it so that we can help people afford to be parents. Let's especially help those moms and those young moms. It is very expensive to be a parent. So that's what the child tax credit is all about. It is about using our tax system to ensure that parents have what they need for their children. So if we're able to do that and do that permanently, just like that, we would cut child poverty in the United States by one half. We would be able to address things like the mortality rate when it comes to just bearing a child and having a child.
Yeah,
our mortality rate looks more like third world countries or developing countries than it does the rest of the wealthy industrialized Western world. So those are some of the things, as well as many others. You know, climate change, unfortunately, has become a politicized issue. It really shouldn't. If you are right now in Georgia or North Carolina and you are suffering from a storm, your power has been knocked out, it hasn't been restored, your community has been devastated, I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican or independent, the fact that storms like that are happening more often and more frequently, that is the reality. That's not a projection. And here we are after the last storm. I know the folks in Florida are getting ready for another potentially catastrophic hurricane in just a couple days. Here in Philadelphia, you might say, well, you know, that's the South and what about here at home? Well, my goodness, I never thought as a kid born and raised in Philadelphia that I would see the Vine Street Expressway filled with 15 feet of water, which I went and personally observed a couple of years ago when it happened. That is a sign, as well as having to ride out two tornadoes in our basement in the last couple summers. That's a sign that the weather that we grew up with, the climate that we grew up with, is not what we have today. And projected to even get worse as the temperatures get warmer and warmer every year. Well, guess what? Communities that are lower income and that have fewer resources are less prepared to adapt to the climate of what it has become in recent years and what it is projected to become in the next 1 to 2 decades. That's something that needs to be immediately addressed. And I try to talk about this not in some abstract, fancy way, but in a very realistic way. Mm. We're having storms more often and they're more powerful, and we need to get prepared or else. So those are the kind of things and many others. Finally, that I will just say is, make no mistake about it, the fight to protect our healthcare is alive and well and a hot one in the United States of America. That means protecting the Affordable Care Act, which provides health care for 30 million Americans. Mm. It also provides protections for tens of millions of more back before the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. You could be denied insurance if you had a pre-existing condition. There were all sorts of things that were considered a pre-existing condition. If you hit a lifetime cap, even though you were paying your insurance every month, that insurance company could say, all right, sorry, I know you're in that hospital bed, but you've hit the lifetime cap. We're cutting you off. They now can't do that ever since Obamacare was passed. Well, if the wrong person gets in the White House and has a majority that thinks like him in Congress, the Affordable Care Act's going away, folks. They tried that before. It came within one thumbs down about 2 o'clock in the morning from the late Senator John McCain, or that would have been gone. Of course, the fight to preserve our health care is not just about the Affordable Care Act. It's about more than that as well in terms of the ability of women to control their own bodies and their own reproductive care. So there is a lot on the line in this election, and so much more than even I had the chance to just briefly describe.
Wow. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for the clarification when I was saying, you know, control of the House. And it's not about control. And I'm glad that you made that very clear to the American people. It's about being in a position to do what is right for the American people. So I thank you for that. I'm glad we were able to clear that. Also, my question is, and I know this is like a, you know, you hear this all the time, why vote? Why is it important that people get out there and vote?
Yeah, you know, so some of the issues that I just described, and that was really just scratching the surface. Fortunately or unfortunately, the differences between our two parties are greater today than at any point since the Civil War. When we look at immigration, the economy, healthcare, race and justice, the environment, so much more. Unfortunately, we do not have the, you know, when I was growing up in the 1980s, the parties were probably like this. You had moderate and liberal Republicans as well as conservative Republicans. You had moderate and conservative Democrats as well as liberal Democrats. Now the parties are here. Mm. No one can say they don't understand the differences between the two approaches and the two parties. Have there ever been two presidential candidates more different in life experience and issues and in so many ways than Kamala Harris and Donald Trump? Among the many other differences, one was literally a career prosecutor and the other is a convicted felon running for president.
Wow.
Doesn't get more different than that. So if someone wants to say they don't want to vote, it's hard for me to understand that because the consequences are so great. But something that no one can say is, oh, well, there's no difference between the two candidates or the two parties. Hmm. In reality, there's a world of difference, and more today than at any other point since the Civil War. I think we were better off and healthier as a country when the parties were a bit closer together. Hmm. But that's not the reality that we live in this era.
As a father, I'm so tin, and one of a who's a girl dad.
Proudly so.
Absolutely. And she going to get all them coins. Amen.
she is not shy. My daughter, Abby, is 10, is in fifth grade, and my wife is an elementary school teacher.
Awesome.
And so they both keep me on my toes, but my daughter is a very strong young woman who makes her opinions known, and my wife and I are very, very fortunate to be parents.
Absolutely, and I'm sure even to think of a 10-year-old who has strong opinions, and of course because she has seen the example of you and your lovely wife, and allowing her to express herself respectfully about different issues. But as a parent, outside of the normal concerns that happen with their safety and their mental state, their emotions, what are other issues that you would want to make sure, as one who's in the Congress, that she will have the same opportunities that you and I might have had in growing up and being able to enjoy life differently than what could be proposed if not?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, there are two things that come to mind. The first is, you know, anytime on the news I hear about, you know, you get the immediate breaking news alert that there's been a school shooting, my heart immediately drops, as you can imagine, with my wife being an elementary school teacher and my daughter in the fifth grade. The fact that my daughter has already gone through a number of training drills about a school shooter, there's something very sick. I mean, I know why they do it.
Right.
But the fact they have to do it is sick.
That part.
And that's not something that you or I grew up participating in, Bishop.
No.
And we're the only country in the world that has to deal with that. So the epidemic of gun violence, whether it's the mass shooters or the kind of violence that happens day in and day out in different parts of our city, or the third part of it, you know, it's a three-headed monster, the part of gun violence in the United States. There are the dramatic school shooters that get the most media attention. There are the day in and day out crimes that take place, or just fights that back in the day might have been a fist fight and now are being settled by guns.
I know,
but then there's also the third part of it, which is a mass epidemic of suicide.
Yeah.
I don't think we have more mental health problems in the United States than other countries. The difference is we have more guns than anywhere else. So someone who is in the throes of that desperation is more likely in the United States to have a gun in the house and to do the ultimate as opposed to other countries. So that is something that really worries me, and that is part of the United States that my daughter is being born and raised into. The other thing that I would say and I don't have a defined position on it, but I was thinking of this just yesterday as my daughter was on her tablet and loves her tablet and has all this technology that comes almost secondhand to kids today that we didn't grow up with. This is the first generation in humanity that is growing up with all of this technology. And that is something that concerns me, especially as she gets older into the teen years and might be exposed to social media. There are a lot of harmful aspects to that, that I think that as a society, we're just beginning to understand. And as a policymaker, I want to make sure we understand it as best we can so that we can protect our kids. A lot of kids have been exposed to some pretty bad stuff online and have reacted in an extreme way in some instances. That's something that we have to do a better job of policing, I think, while at the same time recognizing that people have, you know, First Amendment rights. So again, it's not something I really even have a defined position on. But as a parent, I have to say, when I see, you know, and my wife and I actively attempt to police how much time she's on, wanting to make sure she's getting outside, playing with her friends, doing the sorts of things that, you know, was a lot easier growing up in a row home neighborhood, and there were plenty of kids around, and we would always play right in a parking lot, right across a church parking lot, right across the street from my house. The churchyard, as we call it, was kind of perfect. Or whether it was football or street hockey, or I think about this, it's crazy. We would actually play tackle football on that concrete. So if I answer these questions like I've been knocked in the head a little bit, there were times growing up I was knocked in the head on that concrete.
No, you're doing just fine.
That sort of lifestyle growing up, is different today for this generation. And I want to make sure that while there are benefits to it, obviously, that we minimize the potential costs.
Absolutely. I have a question for you. How crucial is the PA election? How is it so crucial, this particular election?
It is amazing. I mean, if you are in New York or Texas or Wyoming or Massachusetts, you are jealous of Pennsylvania. You are jealous of us, who are Pennsylvania voters, because we're deciding this election. I mean, the reality is we have a huge opportunity, but also a lot of pressure on our shoulders. In Pennsylvania in 2016, Donald Trump was elected by under 1 percentage point. About 1 out of every 200 voters was the difference between Trump winning or losing. And obviously he won Pennsylvania by that margin and was elected president. In 2020, Joe Biden won by an almost similarly close margin, about 1 out of every 100 voters. Mm. That's how close Pennsylvania was in 2016 and made the difference. In 2020, it made the difference in terms of who got to live in the White House and make all those decisions. 2024, the polls are showing it might even be closer than that. Wow. It might be 1 out of every 300 people making the difference. So the reality is, fairly or unfairly, in our electoral college system, if you live in Pennsylvania, your vote matters so much more than almost every other state. I mean, this election is basically going to come down to Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada, North Carolina. I'll throw that in. I'll say those 6 out of 50 states. And guess what? We're the biggest out of them. Mm. We're actually the one state that either candidate really can't afford to lose. You almost have to win all the others if you lose Pennsylvania. So what difference will Pennsylvania make? We will make the difference either for Donald Trump or Kamala Harris. And I think we'll probably make the difference in the House of Representatives races as well, because we have 4 competitive congressional elections in this state, from the Lehigh Valley and northeastern PA through the Harrisburg area and the Pittsburgh suburbs. Those 4 elections are probably 4 of the top 15, top 20. And they will, how they go will probably also determine the House of Representatives.
Yes, that is very true. And I'm so grateful that you have taken so much time to be with us this morning. I know
I'm glad about it.
On the run. Particularly since we are now less than 30 days away from one of the most important elections of my time. And being 61, I've never seen the times like this.
She's not 61.
Yes, I am.
I'm not going to accuse a bishop of lying.
I'm a great grandma. So, you know, I carry 3 generations, and I concern myself with, like you said, those things that you mentioned for your daughter, and how, you know, this generation, your generation right behind me, how we have to set the precedent for those that will cover my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. So I'm so proud of you and what you are doing, your fight, the Rocky theme, and how you're continuing to fight. And we have to get those other persons through these battles, as you said, statewide, to win on the Democratic side, so that will help Pennsylvania, as critical as it is, with the goal that everyone is hoping to see. So certainly, if someone wants to get in touch with you, find out more about your campaign? How would they be able to do that?
Yeah, you know, there are many different ways to get in touch. I have a number of district offices from Girard Avenue, a block in from Broad Street in North Philadelphia, the Olney Shopping Plaza, as well as one on Bustleton Avenue in Northeast Philly. You can always call as well, 215-355-3355. Or just go on the internet, search my name, Congressman Brendan Boyle. Boyle.house.gov is the website. Boyle.house.gov has all of my legislative information. And feel free to be in touch. We tend to help. I mentioned and I talked a lot about the job in D.C. There's also the job back in the district, which is the work we do in our constituent service offices, the money that I bring home from Washington, D.C., over tens of millions of dollars, been able to deliver to every single neighborhood in the district. That having that equity is incredibly important to me. But in addition to that, thousands of constituents we've been able to help in our offices, IRS issues, passport issues, Social Security, Medicare, VA, those tend to be the issues that we work on the most. So if you have an issue like I just described, then feel free to reach out to our office. All of our folks who work in our offices live right here in our community. You're not calling some 1-800 number and reaching someone halfway around the world. You're actually interacting with someone who also lives right here in our community and cares about the work we do.
Well, Congressman, it has been a joy to have you back on the Bishop Mary Show.
Yes.
And I'm hoping that you will continue to feel free to come back. And certainly we want to have you back as the new term comes in January. And we're hoping that you will win and be reelected. And we can continue the conversation of what we can do to support you as our congressman in the 2nd District. What a joy
well,
to
you.
See you.
Thank you, Bishop. Anytime you want me, I'm here. And be happy to return. If we're in the majority, I would then be chairman of the budget committee, a position that the late Reverend William Gray,
yes,
congressman of Philadelphia in the 1980s held. And I hope that very much I'd be able to follow in his footsteps and perhaps be able to come back about the good work we'll be able to do if the people give us that opportunity.
Absolutely. Please be well and take care of yourself. All right.
Make it a great
Likewise.
Day.
Likewise. Thank you.
And for those of you that are listening, that was Congressman Brendan Boyle making a brief announcement. If anyone knows where Ariana Palmer, age 16, is, please reach out to her mom on Facebook. Ariana Palmer has been missing since September 27th, and we want to hope that this young lady is safe and secure. And as we close out today, thanks, Brother Marcus, and always remember, if you can't be good, be careful. If you can't be careful, don't do it. It may not be worth it. Stay well, and be blessed.
Thanks for tuning in to another dynamic show with Bishop Mary. To contact Bishop Mary, call 833-722-4748. That's 833-722-4748. And she'll get right back to you. Remember, let the healing begin with you. See you next week for another great time together on the Bishop Mary Show.